Okay. नमो तस्से भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्से। नमो तस्से भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्से। नमो तस्से भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्से। Everybody attended the yesterday evening class? Maybe I can just summarize what has been said there. We have defined Abhidhamma as a special Dhamma. Special in the sense that it is not an ordinary Dhamma, it is a Dhamma of those who have Amala, what we have defined as Amala Pragya, who have the spotless wisdom and Sa-anuchara with its accompaniment. The accompaniment of the spotless wisdom is nothing else than the five khandhas of the liberated man. Five khandhas of the liberated man are just beside the normal five khandhas, which they also have. They have the khanda of perfect sila, of perfect samadhi, of perfect wisdom, of perfect liberation, and of perfect knowledge of liberation. This is the nature of the liberated man. And Abhidhamma explains. Abhidhamma is Uttama-jnana, the peerless knowledge of this man, which is explained together with the objects of this peerless knowledge. So, the Atta, we will be discussing in the coming weeks the Abhidhamma on the basis of Abhidhammata Sangaha, of the comprehensive manual of Abhidhamma. The literal meaning is the manual of the meaning of Abhidhamma. Of the meaning of Abhidhamma, and also we have said the Atta has two meanings, the meaning and also the object. And Abhidhamma, the Abhi, the Upasarga, the prefix Abhi, has also meaning beside the special in the sense of belonging to the special man, to the enlightened man. It has also the meaning of the detailed, while the exposition in the suttas is Sankhepato, is always Sankhepa, always condensed. In the Abhidhamma, there is a Vitarato, the detailed exposition in detail. This is also implied in this Upasarga, in this prefix special. So, It explained the knowledge of the liberated man. Its objects and its meanings. We have also mentioned that according to the Theravada tradition, the Buddha himself exposed the seven books of Abhidhamma as preserved in the Theravada tradition. That means Dhammasangani, Vibhanga, the Dhatu, then Pugala Panyati, then Kathavatu, the Yamaka and Patana. So all these books, all this subject matter is, of course, with the exception of Kathavatu, but Kathavatu is also, as I have mentioned, I think yesterday, is also attributed indirectly to Buddha himself. So all these seven books then are directly or indirectly the in the Theravada tradition, the words of Buddha himself. And Buddha thought it is the tradition, I don't know if it is a legend or tradition, the Buddha first taught the Abhidhamma to his mother in the Dhavatimsa heaven. Then what he has taught to his mother, then he always then repeated on the earth. And his first disciple was Sariputta. So the tradition of Abhidhamma is linked directly to Sariputta. In all traditions, so to say, even in the Sarvastivada tradition, the Sariputta is the father of Abhidhamma. After Buddha. And the Buddha always praises the Sariputta as being the wisest, as being the his son. Son means Atmaja, Ataja, born for himself, born from himself, from born from Dhamma. Because the self of Buddha is nothing but the Dhamma. One who sees, as the suttas say, one who sees the Buddha sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. So in contrast to that, as we have said, I will not go into detail, the in the northern tradition, the northern tradition of Abhidhamma is based on the Vaibhashika, that is a Sarvastivada, orthodox Sarvastivada. And in the Sarvastivada tradition, even the Mahayana Abhidhamma, which is a work not of the disciples but of the bodhisattvas, the Vaibhashika Abhidhamma is then the base for Abhidhamma study. And in a way, we can say that the Mahayana or Northern Abhidhamma is directly related to the subject matters and to the methodology discussed in the Vaibhashika Abhidhamma, especially as compiled in the most popular compilation of Abhidhamma in the northern tradition of the, that means of the so-called Vaibhashika Abhidhamma or Sarvastivada Abhidhamma or Hinayana Abhidhamma, as it is called in the tradition, is Abhidharma Kosha, attributed to Vasubandhu. It does not mean that in the northern tradition we have only Abhidharma Kosha as the summary or comprehensive manual of Abhidhamma. There are many others like Abhidharma Hridaya, Samyukta Abhidharma, and so on. But the Abhidharma Kosha became the most popular so popular that it is said that in Nalanda the even the parrots were the monks were so tichtic, so diligent in studying the Abhidharma Kosha, no matter to what tradition they belong, that even the parrots on the trees were repeating the stanzas of Abhidharma Kosha. Now, we have a little similar situation in the Theravada tradition, which we take as the base of our exposition. In Theravada tradition, there are many. There were many attempts, because these seven books of Abhidhamma, the subject matter of these seven books and meaning of these seven books, is the whole complex of learning, which is not easy to approach for the non-initiated. Then the study is started by this, by summaries. And the most popular summary in the Theravada tradition of the content of the seven books of Abhidhamma is what you have now in hand, I hope you have, is Abhidhamma Tasangaha. And similarly, like Abhidhamma Kosha in the northern tradition, all students, they start the practical in the institutes even today, start the study of Abhidhamma by learning this book. And the traditional way is just to memorize it first, and then it is exposed by the teacher. When I was student in Alanda, I started learning Abhidhamma with a Burmese teacher, Ujagara, and he, being versed in this tradition, he always first asked me to memorize verse by verse. Then only when I have memorized, he would explain. This is a tradition. So the similarly in the, we can say that in, especially in Burma is the what Tibet is for the northern tradition, the Burma is for the southern tradition. It is the, so to say, the place where the tradition was best preserved, the learning was best preserved. This continuity of learning is due to the isolation of these countries. And nowadays, as opposed to the northern tradition, in the southern tradition, the Abhidhamma learning is connected with a meditative tradition which was preserved up to the present day. The Paok Sayadaw, who has visited this place and with whom I was fortunate to learn, is the one of the outstanding representatives of this living tradition of Abhidhamma. So it means that these things which are discussed in the Abhidhamma, in particular in our Abhidhammata Sangaha, which is the most popular manual of Abhidhamma, is not just meant to be studied, it is also, there is possibility to see all these things in meditation. And because of this unique tradition, then I will try also to discuss the contents of this book, Comprehensive Manual of Abhidhamma, from making some, especially some connections to the living tradition as it is preserved in Burma. So in Burma, as Bhikkhu Bodhi mentions in the preface to this book, beside this Abhidhammata Sangaha, there are other 9 manuals trying to make a comprehensive survey of the whole most important subject matter of the Abhidhamma. 3 of these manuals, that means beside Abhidhammata Sangaha, also Nama Rupa Paricheda, then Paramatta Vinicchaya, are also attributed to our same author, to Anuruddha Acharya. The other, maybe it is better not to switch off the mobiles, because anyone has a mobile, please switch it off. So the other manuals which are very popular, say the second maybe most popular manual of comprehensive meaning of Abhidhamma is the Abhidhamma Avatara by Buddha Datta. And Buddha Datta, there is a tradition that Buddha Datta was a teacher or related in some way or another to our author, to Anuruddha Acharya. But actually, when Anuruddha Acharya lived, nobody knows. This is an old tradition in India. The people leave, especially great, those who are greatly accomplished, leave works behind, without leaving their name even. and time in this time in Buddhism is counted in kalpas. One kalpa, how long one kalpa is, very difficult to measure, no possible to measure in years and in months and in days. So with this spirit, of course, it was very common, as opposed to China or to Europe, where people were very much conscious of time and of history. It is a tradition in India, not only in Buddhism, also in some of the most important books of spiritual lore. Nobody really knows when they were written and even who was their author. So nobody really bothered to record. Even so, Anuruddha Acharya is very important for the Theravada tradition. Nobody bothered to really to record when did he live, what was his lay name, which family he was born, which land he was born. We just do not know. The fact is that the first commentary to Abhidhammata Sangaha was written sometimes in Polonnaruwa period. It's called Puranatika, and it is by scholars dated to the 12th century or 11th century. Then the most important commentary to comprehensive manual of Abhidhamma, which I'm going to use, which I have in hand here, is Vibhavini Tika. And Vibhavini Tika is the author of Vibhavini Tika. I think it's Sumangala Swami. Is the disciple of this famous Kassapa Swami, who is the author or the main personality behind the compilation of the tikas to Atakatas of the Tipitaka in the Polonnaruwa period. Then after that, we have several other tikas which are used, but not so prominent in the modern times. The important tika was written by Lady Sayadaw. And then several other scholars who have also criticized him. You will find this information in the introduction to this book. Then there are other manuals, such as Saccha Sankhepa, which is attributed to Dhammapala, the commentator of Visuddhimagga. Then there is Chola Kassapa, who from India, who wrote the Mohavichedani. Then there is this famous Burmese Sadamajotipala, who also wrote, who came to Sri Lanka in the Kotte period, I think. Also wrote a commentary to manual of the whole Abhidhamma. Then there is this Khema Pakarana, written by Khema also later, Polonnaruwa period. So this learning of Abhidhamma was very, very vivid in Sri Lanka up to the Gotte period, and then it was transformed to Burma, where this learning was preserved. So now we come to our book, which we have started discussing yesterday. It starts with the worship of the Triple Gem as usual. Then the next verse is Tatha Abhidhamata Chatubhidha Paramatato Chittam Chetasikam Rupam Nibbanam Chatubhidha Sabada. Here, what is the meaning? Here is the as we have explained, there are four supreme meanings or supreme objects. And these supreme meanings on the supreme objects, which so to say are the summary of all that one has to learn, their meaning, their mutual relationship, the purification or purification of mind connected with their understanding, and the bondage of mind connected with their non-understanding. All this is a subject matter that follows. So, briefly saying, in the absolute sense, in the highest sense, all that we can learn in this world are these four supreme meanings or the supreme objects. Everything that there is in the supreme sense is nothing but these four objects or four meanings. So by understanding these four supreme meanings or the four supreme objects, as far as the supreme Dhamma is concerned, as far as the supreme truth is concerned, there is nothing more to learn. So the first supreme meaning and the supreme object to learn then is citta. Before we come to citta, we want to emphasize especially that, as we have explained, the Abhidhamma approach as opposed to the Suttanta approach or the Vinaya approach, is explaining the Dhammas in the sense of truths and also in the sense of true objects of perception or true objects of mind. Dhammas is, as we have mentioned yesterday, is that which has sabhava or salakana. This is a very intricate word and very complex, and it is in a way the understanding of what sabhava, what the self nature is the root of all interpretation of the sabhava, understanding of the sabhava, is then the root of all the different approaches we have in Buddhism to understanding of Dhamma and to understanding of the way to liberation. So the Abhidhamma approach, as it is presented in the so-called what is considered to be the by the Mahayana scholars to be a Hinayana schools, or lesser vehicle, that means the vehicle, lesser vehicle in the sense, the vehicle of the disciples, of the Arahants, as opposed to Mahayana, the vehicle of the Buddha. So the criticism of the Mahayana, and in a way the whole structure of Mahayana, is based on the criticism of this concept of sabhava or svabhava. So it is very important to understand it. And Theravada, by many Mahayana scholars, because they never study, bother to study Theravada, they have a very serious misunderstanding of the Theravada Abhidhamma, in the sense that they consider the so-called Hinayana school the same as the Vaibhashika, the idea of the sabhava, of the self-nature of entities. They consider to be same, no matter whether it is Theravada or Sarvastivada. But in fact, there are some very important differences in interpretation of how the sabhava is understood in the Theravada tradition and in the Sarvastivada tradition or Vaibhashika tradition. Not go into detail on that. What is very important to point out, that as we have seen the paramattas, we have the four supreme meanings, the four supreme meanings, the four supreme objects. One of them then being Nibbana, and the others, as we have said, being citta, cetasikas, and rupa. Now, this of course is is problematic because the supreme meaning or the supreme object, because the supreme can be, there can be only one supreme. It is very difficult to have many supremes. And what is exactly the relation between the supreme of Nirvana and the supreme of the citta, cetasika, and rupa is not explained. It is only that supreme is understood, supreme object or the supreme meaning is understood also in ontological sense, also in epistemological sense. But what exactly the relation between the four different supremes, and how we can have four different supremes, it is not mentioned. It is what is understood is that when we understand these four supreme meanings, the four supreme objects, we can attain liberation. So the Abhidharmic, as some scholars have pointed, some very intelligent scholars have pointed out, the Abhidharmic approach in a way is a pluralistic approach. In that sense, the Abhidhamma is linked to, like, Samkhya philosophy, which has also similar approach. Where by understanding in Samkhya, by understanding 25 tattvas, 25 realities, we understand everything. In Abhidhamma, as we see here, Abhidhamma Tathāgata, by understanding the four supreme objects, the four supreme meanings, we also understand everything. Then, as we will see, then each of these except the Nibbana, which is only one, even so we speak of the two Nibbanas, the one with the five aggregates of existence still remaining, and one without five aggregates of existence. The Nibbana is only one. But the, as we will see, the one citta becomes 89 or 121 cittas. This is a peculiarity of the Theravada Abhidhamma approach. This detailed analysis of citta, which is based on a very, very detailed analysis of the mind processes of the citta vitis. but this division in of one citta into many cittas is not problematic because the citta as such has only one characteristics of differentiating the object, vijanati. So all these 90, all these 81 or 121 cittas, states of consciousness, they actually have only one characteristic of differentiating the object. But when we come to the cetasikas, we get 52 dhammas, each with a different characteristic. And it is a peculiarity of the Theravada Abhidhamma as opposed to the Sarvastivada Abhidhamma that all these Dhammas in the tradition are not only discussed from the point of view of their Salakana, their own characteristic, but they must be also understood from the point of view of rasa. Rasa means, it is a word very difficult to translate in English. In this book they translate by function, but actually rasa is much more than just function. Literally, rasa means taste. Those who are students of Indian culture probably know that how important place in Indian culture the rasa had, or the music, different types of music, different types of even the different types of medicines, even the different types of experience are all classified into different rasas, different tastes, different. That means the function actually means the taste of the object, how one actually experiences it, beside just only function. This part of the analysis is also there in the Sarvastivada tradition, also in the Vaibhashika. Also, even the Yogacara, they discuss the Dhammas also as in the sense of Lakhana, Lakshana, and Rasa. Their function. But what is particular about the Theravada approach is that this is not considered to be sufficient. There has to be also a Padatthana. I should mention Pachupatthana. Pachupatthana means Prati Upasthana. It means how these Dhammas actually appear. What is their manifestation, how they appear how they establish themselves in our perception. Then the very important thing to show that all these dhammas
are everything that exists in the world only exists in interdependent origination. So these salakanas, these self natures, or these self characteristics, they only arise, the Theravada tradition, as opposed to the Sarvastivada, is very much emphatic on the fact that all these self-existent natures, they can only arise in interdependent origination. And arising in interdependent origination, they, of course, they are, the Theravadins would agree, they are empty of interdependent nature as such. They are empty of independent nature. Yet nevertheless, they have a lasting characteristic. No matter whether today or in future or in the past, the characteristic of the earth remains the hardness, and the intelligent man knows that the hardness, we can only experience hardness when we know softness. Without knowing softness, we cannot know hardness. Similarly, the heat being the self-characteristics or the self-nature of fire, every intelligent man knows that the heat, we can only know heat when we know the coolness. I know this book to be cool because my hand is warm. If I don't know the hand being warm, I cannot know the coolness of this book. So obviously, these salakanas or sabhavas of these dhammas are not meant as something existing independently in the three times, but only as it is understood in the Vaibhasika tradition and as it is criticized by the Mahayana scholars. In the Theravada tradition, they have never committed themselves to such an idea. So, as Visuddhimagga clearly explained, the nature of the interdependent origination is emptiness. So, in ultimate sense, these dhammas, even in the Theravada tradition, these dhammas are considered as empty. Yet nevertheless, they have a real characteristic, real self nature, which is lasting. Now, as we know, the students of the Mahayana all know that all this structure of these self-existing dhammas or self-existing characteristics was smashed completely. Even so, it was the development of many, many hundreds of years and many, many endless disputes of which Dhamma has a real characteristic and which not, which is just a Dhamma of convenience and which is a real existing Dhamma. This was a subject matter of the endless discussions in the history of Buddhism. Each school of Buddhism had its own version of the real existing Dhammas. And the Dhammas which are matter of convenience. Now, the Nagarjuna has then criticized and, so to say, logically demolished the possibility of this sabhava, of the self-existing or nature. Logically, it is in the Buddhist sense, it is not tenable. Now, after in the development of Mahayana, as the students of Buddhism know, then there appeared the disciples of Nagarjuna, like the Chandrakirti, the Prasangikas, who claim that the these dhammas, there is no nature whatsoever, that the nature of dhammas is the nature of others. The whatever exists in virtue of the existence of others. So this is then the meaning of emptiness. Some scholars, as you know, they like the Bhava Viveka, they accepted the nature, the real nature of entities just for the sake of argument. Then for the Yogacharas, as you know, comes a very different interpretation. The things, the outer things, don't have any nature at all. But that which has a real nature is a mind and its mental factors. All that we understand in this world is just a manifestation of this mind. Now, so in the Theravada tradition, we come to kind of a middle position. Theravada Abhidhamma is based on the analysis of these sabhavas of these real natures, existing natures, or self natures. But these self natures are definitely existing only in interdependence and cannot arise without the other existence of other entities. So this is an approach which is followed in our analysis, and with this understanding then we come to the first supreme object and supreme meaning in the world, which is citta. Now, according to in the Pali or Sanskrit language, the citta or mind has many different synonyms. The most important one being mano, manas, and vijnana. And these manas, vijnana, and citta are in Atasalini and so on, in the commentaries of Abhidhamma, are considered to be just synonyms, also in Visuddhimagga. Their difference is in only in expressing the different aspect of the subject matter. So the citta is defined as that alambanam chinteti iti cittam, that which cognizes the object, that is the mind. When we speak of mana, what is emphasized by the mana is that by which one is thinking. Yena manyate tat manas. So the mind is considered as an instrument of thinking, as the action of thinking, chintana, and also as that which thinks about the object. And then we have the vijnana. Vijnana is from vi janati, that which differentiates. So the mind is also that which differentiates the objects, which so all these meanings are there, and they are synonyms for the same in the Theravada tradition, also in they are synonyms for the same phenomena of mind. The most important what is the mind is understood especially as chintana. Just thinking. So what it means is that there is no possibility of just like in European philosophy, cogito ergo sum, I cognize, therefore I am. It's only cogito ergo cognatio est. I think, therefore there is cognition, and the cognition is nothing else than the mind. And that mind, which is cognition, is also the instrument of cognition. And it is that by which the object is cognized. Now, the students of the Northern tradition know that these synonyms became, in later development of Buddhism, came to represent three different meanings, three different functions. Three different types of consciousness. And this happened because the citta is understood not only as alambanam chinteti iti cittam, not only as that which cognizes the object. Alambana means literally that which cognizes. Object means what one hangs the mind on. Alamb. The mind does not function without being hanged at the object. Because we hang it at the object, it starts functioning. But there is another very important aspect of mind which is crucial for understanding of mind. This citta is also interpreted as chinoti, from the root chit, which means to gather, that which gathers the karma. That which gathers our experience. That which gathers the traces or the seeds of the karma. also the this citta, this very mind, as it appears in the samsara, is the interdependent entity, which arises due to kamma, due to sankhara. Kamma is nothing else but the accumulation of sankhara. So, due to accumulation of sankhara, there is mind, worldly mind. And due to worldly mind, there appears again, as the Milinda Panha explains, the mind appears due to kamma, and due to worldly mind again appears kamma. So this is the endless turning of the samsara. So this process of differentiating, of thinking, appears due to previous accumulation of kamma, and again due to this process of thinking, differentiating, the new kamma is being accumulated. This is very important to understand this process. The mind is a key. So it comes first. In the as we have said in Abhidhamma, all the dhammas are discussed in terms of lakkhana. The lakkhana of mind is then vijanana, the differentiating. Function of mind, or the taste of the mind, is pubangama, the coming as a forerunner. The famous, the most important book of the Buddhism, the Dhammapada, starts with the famous words, is mano pubangama. Dhamma, mano seta, mano maya. The mind is the forerunner of all things. It is often explained in Abhidhamma, the mind, forerunner of all things, is the patisandhi mind, is the mind which links us to new rebirths. But it is not, we can understand it not only in this restrictive sense. Even so, the mind appears together with its object and with its mental factors which give it content, without the mental factors, the mind has no content. It is also very important to understand. That is why we find in the Buddhist literature also, not only in Mahayana, also in the sutantas, the so-called agamas. The mind is called anidasana ananta. Sabato pabhasaram. Because it is without everything that we experience, we can only experience through mind. And mind has no form of its own. Its form is defined by its object and by its mental factors. In this sense also, we can take it as the pubangama, as even so it arises in interdependent origination. It is the main condition of everything we experience. That is why the Pachupatana, the manifestation of mind, is sandahana. Sandahana means putting things together. Where there is mind, we start putting things together. Where there is no mind, no putting things together. This is subject, this is object. This is grasping, this is to be grasped. All this is due to differentiation. Without differentiation, nothing to be grasped, and no one, nothing grasping. That is why the nature of mind as vijanana is clearly only the nature of mind caught up in the interdependent origination. Caught up in the truth of suffering, while interdependent origination is nothing else but the truth of suffering. That is why the padatthana means the most important cause among many, many causes. That which arises in interdependent origination cannot arise due to one cause. The difference of between Buddhism and the theistic philosophies is just in that one who understands Buddhism cannot believe in one cause. It is not possible. Yet, even so, we don't believe in one cause. There is still the primary cause of arising of entities. And the primary cause of arising of mind is nama and rupa. The differentiation between corporeality and mind with its mental factors. Nama means not just mind, it means mind together with mental factors. Because only when mind is together with mental factors, it can go to the object. If no mental factors are there, where will it go? So the as discussed in the Agamas, the Mahanidana Sutta and so on, the Nama Rupa is the main cause of mind. And the mind again is the main cause of the Nama Rupa. Without mind, no Nama Rupa. Without Nama Rupa, no mind. And so, everything we can experience in this world is nothing but this Nama Rupa conditioning mind, and the mind again conditioning Nama Rupa. All that we can understand, we can differentiate, we can think about, we can conceive, we can contemplate, in this world is just mind contemplating Nama Rupa and Nama Rupa conditioning mind. It is very important to understand. So, because our time is coming to the end, we will make we stop here, and tomorrow we will continue the how this mind, one mind, one vijanana, one cognition of the object, one differentiating of the object, one thinking of the object becomes many minds. Now, I have started mentioning that in the Mahayana tradition, that is Yogacara tradition, not all Mahayana tradition, this Chitta, Mana, and Vijnana, these three synonyms become three different functions of mind. And here, the Chitta, in the sense that Chinoti iti Chittam, in the sense that it accumulates the seeds of all the kamas, that it accumulates the all that we can understand in the world. We can only understand through the mind. The mind, it is said, the chittam eva samsara, the mind is a samsara. The due to mind, we are purified, and due to mind we are defiled. And that mind, citta, which is the base of everything, then becomes in the Mahayana tradition the alaya vijnana. That is a synonym of citta then. alaya vijnana is that which appropriates this body and the world. This is how this chinoti is understood. Then that which thinks about this mind which appropriates the body and the world and which contains the all the seeds of our experience, which are nothing else but the experience of our mind, that which thinks about it and contemplates it as being self, that is the mana. The mana, the thinking, and thinking is nothing else but the thinking about the mind, which appropriates the body and the world. Arises due to the kamas accumulated in it, the seeds of kamas accumulated in it. And then this thinking about the mind is the base for differentiation, for vijnana. Then the six types of consciousnesses which differentiate and which correspond in a way to our definition of mind as vijnana, they are then the so-called differentiating consciousnesses. So three types of consciousness. One consciousness becomes three types of consciousness. This is the peculiarity of the Yogacara approach. Because I have mentioned, I explain very briefly, and we will end today here, and tomorrow we will explain the different divisions within this mind, which is the first basic supreme object or the supreme meaning, the understanding of which is the necessary condition for enlightenment. No one has ever become enlightened without understanding mind. Understanding of mind is the condition of enlightenment. So the mind comes first also in our desana kamma. The Buddha explains entities according to the desana kamma. The best way for the sake of teaching, or according to uppatti kamma, according to how they arise. The minds, as we have seen, cannot arise without the object, without the rupa, and without the mental. Even so, it is put in the first place, not that it arises first, but that it is the most important one for enlightenment. And what are these important divisions within this mind, and how they are seen in the living Abhidhamma tradition, we will discuss tomorrow and after that. So much for today, and we, as usual, transfer merit for the benefit of all sentient beings.
Akasatta chabumattha deva naga mahidika punyantang anumoditva chiram rakantu loka sasanang. Akasatta chabumattha deva naga mahidika punyantang anumoditva chiram rakantu desanang. Akasatta chabumattha deva naga mahidika punyang tang anumoditva chiram rakantu tumamparang. Devo vasatu kalene sasa sampati hetu cha pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammika.